You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing, Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so glad to have our guest joining us on the show today, Tina Hui, who is working to bring awareness and to help educate communities on electronic currency. So this is something that you may or may not know too much about, but I guarantee by the end of this discussion, you too will be an expert on this topic. So Tina, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much. And, you know, we're so excited to have this conversation because, again, a lot of people might not know too much about electronic currency. But before we get to that, Tina, I want to learn more about your background. You've worked in areas like public relations and marketing before for different companies. So if you wouldn't mind just explaining a little bit about what your past experiences working in those types of companies was like?
Where do we begin? I guess going as far back as when I was in high school, a few friends and I started going door-to-door selling websites, actually. Just brick and mortar, just simple, you know, retail sites for things like car dealerships, restaurants and such, just knocking on doors. And I guess that's where I kind of first started my public relations PR type of background work for kind of just making sure everybody's happy doing customer service on a basic level. And then I guess after that, we kind of, you know, we've gone through and had quite a bit of experience in different places, like being an intern over at the Bay Guardian. San Francisco Bay Guardian was one of the first independent newspapers in San Francisco, and I was a marketing intern there, and I gathered a lot of internships. I have to recommend anybody interested in following business marketing or strategy that it's a good idea to even just get your feet wet and have an internship in marketing at any publication, any company that you're kind of interested in. Even a job as an office manager will teach you a lot about how a company runs. And so I guess, you know, we've had a ton of different experience. I've had a lot of experience at different companies, including Management Solutions, Warner Brothers, where I was actually a publicist for many years, a law firm, Gordon Reese, and of course, the Warner Brothers, Warner Independent, Fox Atomic opportunity was with Terry Hines and Associates, which does regional movie screenings. All of those movie screenings that you can maybe apply to go to buy a radio station or TV station to win tickets or get kind of a free pass to in some way, shape, or form, and maybe even have a Q&A with movie stars. That's kind of the job that I had. And then after that, I got hired by Snapfish, which was a division of Hewlett-Packard. And I worked there for 3 years, making them double-digit million dollars a year, first as an associate in marketing, kind of just learning the ropes. And then you start doing business deals, and then that turns into doing direct digital marketing and affiliate marketing, which was all about publishers and advertisers. So anytime that you see like a mommy blogger or something like Ebates, where you get cash back on some purchase that you're making on Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Nobles or even Williams Sonoma, you can actually get a cash back from that deal. And so we were kind of giving great, unique opportunities to get coupons for those sites. And I guess to wrap things up a bit, I started consulting pro bono for nonprofits to kind of gain experience back in college. And then ever since then, I had been running my consulting business, doing marketing and strategy, business development, and helping out with sales and all of that with numerous different companies, from Ronald McDonald House to First Graduate, which is both nonprofits, mm-hmm. to One Medical Group, and even onwards to Eat 24 Hours and such.
Very nice.
That's, I guess, my background.
Very nice. And like you said, you have a pretty extensive background in different areas of business. And then eventually you caught the entrepreneurial bug. So what made you want to switch to this area of business, being your own entrepreneur? And if you could just talk briefly about your first startup and what that was like.
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think if anybody has ever worked for a company for more than 2 years or even just 1 year. But I mean, typically, at least back when I was kind of graduating and going through my career, the typical turnover would be you stay at a company for 2 to 3 years and then you kind of, you know, move on to the next company and you climb the corporate ladder. And that was the normal path. And then now entrepreneurship has become almost like a glorified best path for folks. And, you know, it's arguable which one's better. I think it's always good to get your feet wet and get some experience with different companies and then see where your interests lie. Very basically, my father is also an entrepreneur, so I think the expectations were a little bit different, at least in my family. Most families, you know, your parents maybe have a steady job and then they want you to at least have a safety net and security and stability. In my family, that was a little bit different. Both my mother and my father were entrepreneurs who became business owners. And I guess it's always been an expectation that perhaps I will find something that I like doing, since I guess the lesson, at least for my father, was why work for somebody else when you can be the boss? So that's a little bit different from most people. But I also remember taking any opportunity to try and see if maybe something sticks or something is of interest. And kind of if you work at a law firm for a while, you could see that maybe, you know, they actually don't have the best hours. You're working long, long hours and you're kind of a slave to your desk. And, you know, then you go into corporate and you realize actually freedom of being able to make choices and decisions in a quicker sense, or not having to deal with procurement and long dragged out, you know, decision-making processes and payment processes is a bonus, because you kind of get stuck sitting here going through supply chains and like getting approvals. And, you know, half the time innovation moves faster than what you kind of can get resources to get yes and say yes and sign off on in a corporate environment. And then things also come into play. Like I have always looked a little bit younger than most people, and you know, age discrimination was a true thing. Gender discrimination is also true. And oftentimes, surprisingly, it's females that proliferate the gender bias within each other. So, you know, it becomes kind of daunting and also discouraging to kind of keep hitting walls. And you're going, you know, when I was starting my business as a consultant and helping out, you sometimes effectively, as the entrepreneurial way goes, you can actually help and wear many more hats and be way more productive and helpful for any organization in kind of more of a democratic system, sort of like with, you know, horizontal leadership versus vertical, which is the case of entrepreneurship. So that was very much more appealing all the time. So I guess that's what drives me, is innovation and creating new things and being able to push that envelope forward without hitting so many barriers to every decision-making process or even to entry.
Absolutely. And now you started a new business, a new company that we'll get to later on the conversation. But for now, the area that this company is in is in fintech. And this might be a new term for some. So can you explain briefly what fintech is and what that acronym represents?
Well, fintech is actually two parts. It means finance and tech. So it's basically innovations in finance and tech coming together, which historically, honestly, finance has been around for far longer sometimes than even tech. You know, banking back even further, the history of money, you go all the way back to like bartering systems where you used to barter, you know, goods and services. Somebody would clean your house, you give them maybe some vegetables, you know, back when people were farmers. And then following the history of money, the innovations in finance have become pretty stagnant by the last 20 or 30 years or so. So for decades, finance has been defined as you have banks and you've got governments controlling currency. And so, you know, you've got financial institutions, you've got Goldman Sachs and such on Wall Street, but you didn't really have that much innovation occurring. The system with, you know, we call it the boys club for a reason, and it is pretty much been the case that people, you know, kind of governments, sometimes if they're kind of emerging countries or even the United States, a lot of organized crime and corruption kind of dictates a lot of financial innovation and in a collusion with politics and politicians and lobbyists and big corporations that have their own interests at heart. And so what's been interesting as of especially this year and the, I guess I would say maybe even the last 3 years, fintech became kind of a new emerging sphere with the advent of something like the mint.com phase of things was like probably the first real financial tech innovation in a long time with Square, you know, Amazon, all of these big merchant services coming on board. And now those have evolved into things that are encompassing things like mobile payments with Uber and Airbnb and cloud sharing, or, you know, there's some debate as to what we should call that kind of economy, but giving the power back to the people and being able to say, you know, there are different ways to innovate with finance. And it's from a technological standpoint, if you're looking from the tech industry, it can often seem as though finance and tech never really are hand in hand or interesting. And you kind of go and plug and play with vendors like Stripe or PayPal and Braintree, or you go work with Square or Visa or MasterCard. And you're realizing now that that needs to shift. Now there's an impetus, like, you know, when we were sitting here looking at farm bill games, and people are, I'm going to touch upon digital currency now, playing for points and earning things that you want to make your farm look better and, you know, increasing gaming. That was actually the first fintech tech innovation that occurred, I think, the last 5 years, where people were saying, hey, you know what, there's actually a new way to kind of look at finance and tech and kind of buying things. So these are all kind of the evolution.
Great. Now, when we come back from our first break, we're going to talk more about the area of fintech, as well as bitcoins and other forms of electronic currency. So be sure to stay tuned with us. We'd also like to encourage you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter by using the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weforshe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing and Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to get right back to our conversation with our guest today on the show, Tina Hui, who once again is bringing awareness and education to the public about electronic currency like bitcoins and working in the areas of fintech. So this is a very exciting conversation to have, and we are going to, once again, just get right back to where we were talking about fintech. Now, Tina, how has finance changed over the years because of the introduction of technology to this field?
I think, well, one of the more poignant things is innovation is actually finally happening in fintech and finance. So more importantly, just looking at it, coming from a background of tech, it was really interesting to enter a new dimension of innovation, which is finance, because you're sitting here looking at, you know, for ages, it was just banks and Wall Street and Goldman Sachs, and you've got the credit system, and you've got credit cards and savings and checking accounts, and that was basically it. Then Square, PayPal, Zynga, all of these guys came on board, including Second Life. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Second Life, but it was a game, and it became almost like a world on the internet layer where people were bartering time for points, which became cash versus digital currency, and went even beyond the internet world, and people were actually buying parts for the video game through eBay. And so it's kind of interesting where, you know, people starting to take a look at Zynga and Farmville and having people look at digital currency and having that evolve into thinking about how you can use currency in apps that they're building. So, for instance, now you've got Uber, Airbnb, Instacart. You could buy your groceries online. You could get a ride and taxi and ride share and car share. And even with Venmo, you can actually sit here and send your friends money if you, say, went and bought tickets from them or decided to take them out to dinner and they wanted to split the check somewhere. So innovation in finance is starting to happen because the apps, people are becoming more mobile. And I think with mobility, there comes kind of an impetus to kind of just take digital on the go with us. People are kind of getting sick of having cash around. You know, if everything's digital, we get to also save trees and save the environment. And everything is going onto the internet. So I think that's kind of a big impetus, is people want mobility, and then everything is going digital. We're with internet, and people just kind of want on-demand services and goods in real time at a more convenient pace.
Wonderful. Now let's talk about the different types of electronic currency that's available. I know one of them is called Bitcoins. There's Dogecoins. There's other forms of currency. So can you explain briefly what the differences are between all these types of currency and what they are truly?
In the world of digital currency, there is definitely kind of a new boom happening with Bitcoin and altcoins, is what they call them, alternative coins. Mm-hmm. You can go on a site called crypsy.com, that's crypsy.com, and see that there are more than hundreds and hundreds of coins now that are being created to kind of act as though they are separate nation states. So if you wanted to kind of take a parallel and kind of understand what's going on with Bitcoin and digital currencies as they're being termed now, it's more like looking at the foreign exchange market and seeing, you know, we have the US dollar, you've got the euro, you've got pounds in England, you've got the yen in Japan, and all of these things are becoming kind of like independent nation state coins. Now, it isn't safe to say go and buy a bunch of any coin that resonates with you right now, because that's not actually a very safe thing to do. There are a lot of people creating coins for their own different varying reasons. So you have to be very careful. Some of them are for gambling. Some of them are, I mean, to be honest, scams, or they're basically ways to game systems or, you know, serve some self-interest such as money laundering or who knows what. But then there's things like Dogecoin, Litecoin, and Bitcoin, which are proving to be more, the more stable currencies that have market shares. And so with enough people using Bitcoin and buying them and investing in them and spending them, or Litecoin or Dogecoin, things become a little bit different, because they're actually trusted standards of digital currency right now. Actually, the only one that's being regulated in a sense, being seen as a real threat, or maybe a positive thing for, you know, currency as a whole and the state of the financial systems, is Bitcoin, since it is being regulated, especially now with the BitLicense in New York, where you, if you are in New York State and operating with Bitcoin in any way as a company, you do have to buy a $5,000 license in order to kind of register with the New York Financial Department, and then kind of make sure that you're doing things in a safe, practical, secure way. So money laundering and all of this tracking isn't going haywire. So I don't know if I'm explaining it correctly. I think there's a lot behind what the new digital currencies are like, which are not to be confused with virtual currencies. I think it's just the term that is being used for things that are, you know, like game systems, like with Zynga and Farmville games, or SimCity games, stuff like that. That still stays in the realm of virtual currency, which is more of a gaming infrastructure.
Great. Now, if you're just now tuning into our show, we are speaking with our guest today, Tina Hui, about electronic currency. Now, Tina, this might be a concept that's difficult for some people to understand. So how are different coins obtained, and where are they stored?
I'm sorry, can you please repeat the question?
Where are things like Bitcoins and different forms of electronic currency, how are they obtained and where are they stored? Is there like a virtual wallet that's online? Where do people keep their currency?
Well, this is an interesting question. So when it comes with digital currencies, moving away from virtual currencies, because those are within your profile accounts with Zynga and games. When you go into the world of Bitcoin and digital currencies that are emerging, with Litecoin and Bitcoin and altcoins, what happens right now is the Bitcoins in particular, and Litecoins and Dogecoin, and many of these coins are being mined by computers. So imagine a data center for a company such as, I want to say maybe Snapfish or Hewlett Packard or Gap. Gap is something that a lot of people are very familiar with. Now, when Gap's website is operating, it takes a lot of data to run that store. You know, you're sitting here running an international store, which means many supercomputers are sitting here storing all the customers' data, all of your email addresses, all of your transactions, mm-hmm. and all of the inventory of goods and services, goods that Gap is selling. And then pricing, all of that gets listed in there. So what's happening with Bitcoin is you've got also the same thing happening where there are, it's the world's largest supercomputer in the world right now, is millions of miners. So basically millions of computers, independent, but nowadays Bitcoin has risen in difficulty of mining Bitcoins. And it's basically data centered folks that are actually making any marginal profits from mining. Since what you do is you run these computers and it spits out a computational algorithm. And every once in a while, there is a magic code that becomes unlocked and then you have mined a Bitcoin. And that is how you get a Bitcoin. It's like mining gold. Back in the gold rush days, it was really easy because gold was everywhere and plentiful. And then now it's been mined to such a degree that Satoshi, who is this anonymous creator of Bitcoin as a concept and then, of course, as a currency, is sitting here thinking about it and saying, okay, well, we wanted 21 million Bitcoins to be available, but with every 3 to 6 months, the mining difficulty is going to increase so that it becomes more and more scarce, which then creates kind of residual interesting things that happen with when you're actually sitting here transacting or mining Bitcoin. You also accrue fees and you can make money by mining or doing an activity. It's really kind of complex. It takes more than just a few minutes to explain, but that's kind of the basic gist of it. And people are storing these mined Bitcoins or Bitcoins that you've acquired by buying them on exchanges, which are basically online banks of digital currency. Some notable ones would be Coinbase, BitPay, and blockchain. These guys are basically sitting here acting as people, places where you can either store your Bitcoins, which would be the case with blockchain, or non-custodial entities where you basically can get your Bitcoin. Each Bitcoin comes with a Bitcoin wallet address. It's a really, really long set of digits and numbers and numbers and letters. And you kind of have to just basically, you can store them offline or in your computer. And right now, a lot of different companies are emerging to kind of let you store your Bitcoin wallets either within exchanges, but you have to make sure that exchange is legitimate and safe and secure, not subject to hacks or subject to scams. Because a lot of these exchanges have been a little bit questionable in the past, especially the most notable one being Gox, MTGox, where millions of dollars were stolen by, we would say at the moment, it seems as though Mark Capellas, the CEO, was a little bit negligent of accounting practices, and he lost quite a few millions of people's coins. And so a very interesting ecosystem where, you know, you have to be very careful and do your due diligence and make sure that the company that you are going to be storing or transacting or even acquiring Bitcoins from or mining Bitcoins with it is safe, secure, and sound. And the best bet right now does seem to be either going with one of the more trusted and true companies or going and storing them offline and writing them down someplace, which is pretty risky, but it's the same thing as you're doing with cash.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, Tina, this is such an interesting conversation, and it's so intriguing to know that there might be a new currency coming our way, and it just sounds like such an incredible, truly an incredible invention for our time. Now, we are going to take another break, but we encourage all of you to let us know what you think of this conversation by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting and leave your comment there. You can also go on Twitter and use the hashtags WomenInvest, #GirlsInvest, and #MeForShe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And welcome back to Women Investing, Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Tina Hui, who is telling us more about electronic currency and the different types of coins that you can find online that might one day make cash archaic, a thing of the past. So this is a very interesting and intriguing conversation, so we're going to get right back to what we were talking about earlier. Now, Tina, this all comes from technology, this electronic currency obviously comes from access to technology. So does this put citizens of underdeveloped countries without available technologies at the disadvantage?
Actually, in fact, what's interesting about Bitcoin is it's proving to be a very good solution for people in emerging countries that are maybe unbanked and or have representatives that they can't really trust and which are a little bit corrupt or have their own agenda. So examples of that, one thing to consider about Bitcoin in totality is that it is an international currency, maybe the world's first international currency that exists without countries or boundaries or borders. It's unless, as long as you have at least a mobile phone that you can connect to the internet Wi-Fi or just have some data to transmit, even just a basic SMS message or text message, mm-hmm. you can actually transact and send Bitcoin. So that's what's happening, especially with places like Argentina and Latin America, Mexico, Cuba, and Africa, Kenya, for instance. In Kenya, there's a company called BitPesa, which is run by Elizabeth Rosilio, excuse me. She's actually a female founder of a Bitcoin company that specializes in remittances. And remittances in a basic fashion and form is basically what happens when somebody in Africa or, say, Mexico is working in Mexico, working in the United States, and then they still have to send money back to their home country to help feed their family or mm-hmm. get their parents or children back over to the United States or to Europe or someplace else where occupational opportunities are more safe, sound, and secure. And so this is the reason why people want to immigrate to countries that are more banked and secure and safe and sound, right? And in emerging countries, it can be very challenging for people to live and make a living without risking their life or without having to worry about being compensated fairly, you know. And so having it's a thing that a lot of people in the United States or countries like Europe or, you know, banked countries kind of take for granted. And you forget that, you know, banks and government are basically, and currency in total even, is something that's oftentimes manipulated by the government, by maybe like the political regime that's running the government there, or even just maybe just beyond banks is what we call it, because banks might be run by families that become almost like monopolistic in how they handle interest rates or, you know, take a bunch of fees for how much you put into the system. Or with the case of Greece, you've got an entire country where people can't take out more than $30 to $60 a day now, and mm-hmm. ATMs are running out of cash to give to folks, and there's a limit because of capital gain controls that went a little awry, and, you know, the country's in severe debt and they can't make that supply available to people to meet people's demands and needs. Right. And now you've got people who are sitting there not able to pay rent, not able to buy food, not even able to, in Argentina, you go to the store and, you know, it might be milk might cost $2 one day and $5 the next day. And so it's really hard for people in those kinds of countries to sit here and have any sense of stability in terms of what price controls are in the market, as well as how much cash they might be able to keep safe within their own homes or even in the banks and mm-hmm. Trusting institutions. And so what's fascinating in those countries, Bitcoin in particular, is becoming the currency where people can actually send each other money seamlessly. And yes, there's still some lag time as the technology develops, and there's like a 10-second transaction wait time, but you can actually go to the grocery store and like buy milk with a Bitcoin, which, you know, even though the volatility in price for Bitcoin is high, you're not dealing with inflationary random reasons as to why, you know, suddenly you can't have money accessible, or why, you know, like maybe the peso suddenly gets affected by China's crisis or gold commodity crisis, which is occurring right now, and the price fluctuating wildly beyond anything that you can control. You know, so it's kind of an interesting bonus for those countries where they actually finally maybe have an answer beyond having to wait and see whether or not the interest rate, the currency rate gets to be a favorable point for them to buy or sell their cash and then get more cash, or, you know, where the value is.
Right. It is a very interesting topic. And, you know, you're helping to educate people further about this topic, it still might be difficult for people to understand. So your startup actually helps to find the solution to that, and that being Follow the Coin. So can you explain to us a little bit more about what this business is and why you decided to start Follow the Coin?
I think we'll start initially with consulting, and that was my business. I was running a consulting business, and a group of us were coming together being asked by a pretty well-known investor to kind of look into a mining operation, meaning we were going to get a bunch of supercomputers together and mine Bitcoin. And then in lieu of that, doing that back in November 2013, the price of Bitcoin was actually at an all-time high to date at $1,200 per Bitcoin.
Wow.
In USD. And so imagine at that time, we've got a lot of investors who were pumping a lot of money into startups in the space. You know, if you were a Bitcoin company back then, you could have easily maybe gotten $1 million, $2 million, even $12 million, which was the case of like Coinbase. And so, you know, a bunch of very big investors were interested in the space. Now, what happened about January 2014, the price of Bitcoin dropped dramatically. Down, I mean, it just kept plummeting, maybe 300 points every day. You know, it's down to now $235, or it's actually between $235 to $250 or $270, mm-hmm. given the week. So it's been stable in that range for about 6 months now. And when you have a currency that has dropped in value to that extent, it became, well, coupled with the fact that it became the hash rate, which is the computational power to mine a Bitcoin, rose in difficulty, which meant you must now forego becoming a hobby miner. And you're basically, the people who are mining and making any profit are folks like BitFury or Spontuli's tech mining operations that have massive data centers stacked with hundreds and hundreds of miners. And then that actually makes it so it's profitable to mine. Otherwise, if you don't have like $1 million or $2 million to build such a data center, it's just pointless to do so. And so we kind of started not focusing our, efforts in the mining operation. And then Follow the Coin was born because learning about Bitcoin is actually really challenging to do, regardless of if you're from an economics background, finance, or tech. I mean, I'm from tech, and it honestly took me 3 to 6 months to finally get a handle on what Bitcoin is, what Bitcoin mining is, and why there's so many altcoins. And even learning something basic, as a lot of folks don't know this, and it took me, I kid you not, 4 months to realize. I had friends buying Bitcoin, like $20 in Bitcoin. I said, I don't understand. If the price of Bitcoin is at $1,200, how can you have Bitcoin with just $20? I think that's a really big thing for people to understand, is you can actually buy a fraction of a Bitcoin, any fraction that you want. So if today you kind of just wanted to have a little bit of a stake and see what the long-term investment would be, or day trade. Some people do day trade Bitcoin like they do on the stock market and see what the price is going to, you know, rise and fall to and make some money off of that and do some short selling.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about Bitcoin is you can go in and buy $5 worth of Bitcoin, $1 worth of Bitcoin, or even $250 and get a whole Bitcoin. Either way, what's interesting is the fluctuation in price of Bitcoin as the market expands and grows is going to be hard to say. You know, will Bitcoin last? Who knows? Speculators are saying yes. And so if it does last, will it end up being worth $250 or will it be worth $10,000 for Bitcoin? You know, it's all a giant question mark at the moment. But given that Bitcoin is getting regulated, it is looking like it is here to stay. Plus the blockchain, which is what all the computational power is kind of being called, and the giant ledger system, which holds blockchains and makes each of those blockchain transactions accountable and have a place in the ledger and saying, hey, this transaction occurred at this time, at this moment. And in some cases, you can even trace back to the owner of that transaction to see what happened there, who mined it. All of that information is stored on this giant database called the blockchain, which is being touted as the most decentralized and stable way to kind of store data on the internet today. So we were kind of learning about all of it. And then we started a blog, meaning to be kind of simple and fun and interesting and easy to approach and learn about Bitcoin. And then we started doing video because it was just kind of funnier and maybe a little bit more easy to connect to the audience and say, this is what's going on. As we were learning about the ecosystem and learning about the market and learning about the big industry players and just trying to understand. We started going to conferences, and then next thing you know, Follow the Coin became the leading video show of Bitcoin. So we were covering news before. Now we're focused more on industry insights, trends, analysis, the people, places, and things that make the industry good and keep it going and are interesting, doing interesting things. And we're also focusing on financial literacy and education moving forward. So we host things like educational conferences, panels. We even hosted the Bitball Awards Gala, which was actually an awards gala pretty much where Crunchies meets Oscars, and you could award folks for the best technology. People could vote for that. It was a peer-to-peer voting. So everybody in the ecosystem could sit here and vote for who they think the best CEO is, who the best company is, which exchange is trustworthy, that kind of thing for the entire industry as a whole. And we've been doing that for quite some time.
Well, it all sounds so amazing. We're going to talk more about Follow the Coin when we come back from this next break. But remember, we do want you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #MeForSheen. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today on the show, Tina Hui, who is letting us know more about electronic currency in the form of Bitcoin. And we're also talking about a startup that she created called Follow the Coin. And just to get back on that subject, Tina, can you explain to us why it's so important that we make sure that the public understands fintech and electronic currency?
Well, actually, that's a very good question. Right now, I think this is the first time Bitcoin in particular, it's been a sort of almost a joke, but not really. Bitcoin kind of came in and a bunch of folks who were very independent in nature, libertarian, anarchist, and entrepreneurial in its ethos, basically these crazy people who wanted to change the system of finance, are kind of succeeding. And for the first time ever, Bitcoin is quote unquote making finance sexy for the first time ever. Now you've got, you know, shows like ours where we were actually quite wacky in the beginning. And a lot of these shows, like there's a couple other personalities, and if you follow the space even a little bit, for the first time ever in the history, I mean, I'm saying like thousands of years now, maybe something, the subjects such as finance, money, banking, and just even looking at ways that the technology can be implemented or used, such as, you know, you can buy a virtual assistant now. You can buy things online with PayPal. You don't even need your credit card when you go shopping. Starbucks lets you buy coffee and gives you loyalty points. And then you can, like, sit here and get free games, maybe accrue free coffee after 10 coffees, and then kind of just use it as a credit card all over the world. I mean, Starbucks is actually the most innovative financial tech app out there right now that I'm looking at, because if you look at it, you can be stranded and your credit card could stop working and you could not have any cash and you could still go to any Starbucks, which is pretty much worldwide, and get a coffee and a bagel or croissant or whatever. And that's kind of powerful in a world where being tied to physical currency and being tied to credit cards and banks and like understanding how the banks are using your money and perhaps even just lending your money out to other institutions to make more money and then hence give you back an interest rate, which is the case of savings accounts. You can bypass all this confusion with credit scores and all of that. And just if you kind of go into the digital world of what's emerging with Bitcoin, with Litecoin or whatever currency is going to be in the future, maybe these companies will make all currency obsolete. The NASDAQ, Bank of America, Visa, they're all looking at the blockchain technology and thinking of ways to go digital, you know, and make it so that maybe people aren't sitting here carrying around thousands of coins and paper dollars in different currency and trading them and like treating each country as a separate currency or financial institution any longer. And it's going to be really interesting to see in the future, what if we do have international currencies and they're dictated by use cases, you know, like maybe one currency is great and you use it because it's good for the environment and they're giving proceeds to saving the world and donating it straight to scientific research, or, you know, cancer, saving cancer, or any kind of application is becoming innovated today. And so it's really interesting to see what's going to happen in the future. I think definitely a lot of people are banking on the idea that, you know, New York State of Department of Financial Services, for instance, I'm sure they want to go digital. I mean, who wouldn't want to go digital now? It's so much easier. Everybody has a mobile phone with them. Everybody right. has even just Apple Watch with them. And if you could just sit here and just ping money to folks, like the Officer's Card in Hong Kong is a great use case. People mm-hmm. are going around with one credit card, going shopping, buying groceries, buying gas, buying, you know, common goods, buying transit, like going and buying tickets to the subway and the train, just with one little debit-ish card, like a loyalty card. And imagine what the world can look like a few years from now when credit cards become obsolete and everything's digital and everyone, it's kind of like watching Mission Impossible and you see everybody just scanning your eyeball and you just bought a car, you know?
Right, right.
Really kind of fascinating.
Very much so. And, you know, this area of fintech and electronic currency is going to continue to develop. It's a very new area. So how do you wish to see Follow the Coin follow that change? Where do you see this company moving and, you know, being, you know, it advancing alongside with electronic currency in the future?
Well, first of all, we love talking to people like you who are, you know, educating specific target audiences or just even other audiences in general. I think this is the first time ever that finance has become of interest and approachable to folks to kind of say, hey, this technology is emerging and I can actually understand it now. You know, like when you're in an right. Uber and you split your fare, or you're in an Uber and you can order different types of services. Like in New York, you can actually order an Uber to deliver food from a restaurant to you. They're just bypassing all of these different apps. And so it's really interesting to see behavior change and people understanding that their money is becoming more and more both transparent, powerful, available, and just easy to understand where that money is being spent and budgeted. And I think with Follow the Coin in particular, we're really interested in making sure that folks kind of understand on a basic level financial literacy. I've spoken to people who are high school graduate students, who are dropouts, who are med school students even, who are telling me that, you know what's broken about this world is people don't know when they graduate from high school or even elementary school or college, and this is astonishing. In 2015, we have credit cards, we have cash, we have all of these things. Nobody actually really has been taught how to save and budget their money and save for big ticket items, what happens with the credit system, what happens in your savings account, why you have a checking account, why you would use anything. And so what we're trying to do now is follow that scope and say, okay, on a basic level, people should be understanding the power of their funds, you know, whether or not you have access to a lot of that or a little bit of it, and what the point is when it comes to taxes and how you have to interplay with like rules and regulations and also the world. And then kind of making your money work for you is important. As investors, as people who are spending money all the time, females in particular, we're very hesitant investors. You know, we like long-term investments that do return. Mm-hmm. And we're more cautious. However, we are the ones spending 80% of household expenditures to date, even with shifting gender roles. And that's probably going to shift in probably 2 years' time as men become, you know, the gender roles between men and women being breadwinners and earners are shifting. And so it's going to be interesting what happens, but it's expensive to be a woman. You know, you've got hair, makeup, clothes, things you want to buy, all of these things that people market to you. And men are starting to see that trend where their hair and makeup, skincare and clothes are coming with a lot more options. And so it's going to be interesting where that buying power and prowess shifts. But this is the time where everything is the whole game of finance and money is shifting. And mm-hmm. so Follow the Coin, we're following that trend where we syndicate directly to the Bloomberg News Terminal. We talk about everything and curate stories about finance and what investors are following, what's innovative and interesting to them, what people who are interested in money on a basic level and in digital currency is following. Because it's going to be interesting what happens as fintech keeps emerging and adapting, and what's going to be next in the future. Are we all really going to be sitting here still tied to cash and hiding cash in our mattresses? Or are we going to be sitting here when, like, having cold storage on the cloud, and you can actually, you know, kind of have like Swiss banks in the cloud, and you can access your funds from there, and you can go on the blockchain and sit here and transfer. Andreessen Horowitz, he's a big investor in Silicon Valley. The most exciting thing he said was the potential for blockchain and Bitcoin to unlock that power, where someday in the future, you and I could be selling you the title to my car, and that car deed and title and the entire transaction happens in the cloud on the blockchain, and I transfer the ownership to you. And with the transfer of ownership, I also give you the keys to the car, which then automatically you can unlock with your mobile phone. I mean, just even thinking on even just a minimal today level, like future application of what, you know, digital currency and fintech and finance innovation can mean in the future, it's incredible. And it's touching every aspect of, you know, games or mobile apps. I mean, most of the time people think about technology innovation and think, you know, things like the iPhone, or you're looking at the Apple Watch and you're looking at computers and even shifting and changing. But actually, if you look on the internet, every merchant is now online. Actually, most people are spending more and more time online looking for promotional coupons and codes, and retail shops are actually dying in terms of how much rev share they are getting from people coming into the store, because people can buy better deals online. And right. So everything, consumer behavior is changing, and I think the future is going to be kind of vastly different from what it is now.
Right. And it's going to be so exciting again to see the future of this area. Now, where can we learn more about Follow the Coin? What's the website, very quickly, so we can learn more about this topic?
Our website is followthecoin.com, and we're Follow the Coin on facebook.com/followthecoin. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Google+. We have an Instagram account. We're also on Twitter at Follow the Coin. And you can also follow myself as well, Tina Hui, and we are posting and sharing and engaging with the community every day. And what's fascinating about Bitcoin and fintech, but more so with Bitcoin, is that people are eager for innovation to occur. And so if you have an idea that could disrupt finance, and you kind of pitch that idea within Bitcoin and start kind of wanting people to help you build on your idea, build your product, build your service, or even just use it, people are more than willing to kind of stretch the boundaries of finance and possibilities in Bitcoin. And they're more than willing to go and help you with and support your project, whatever that idea might be. So that's what's fascinating. In fintech, you realize regular finance, they're having a hard time sitting here being approached and getting on camera or talking to folks. And so, you know, because there's a lot at stake for those big institutional players. But in right. Bitcoin, it's the Wild West. Anything goes, and if you have an idea, I encourage you to like come and talk to one of us at the events that we partner with, like with Stanford and MIT. Those big educational institutions, I mean, MIT has created MIT Labs now, and you can go and learn and like sync up with them and work on a research project to do with fintech and Bitcoin and blockchain. So, I mean, it's an exciting time, and please do follow the coin, no pun intended, and you know, learn more with us. I think that's what Follow the Coin is about, is learning together on how to make sure people are educated about finance, the power of their money, and then where the trends are shifting and what new technologies are emerging to make buying power and spending power more important and accessible.
Excellent. Tina, it's been an absolute honor to have you on our program, and we're so glad that we were able to have this conversation for the public to know more about Bitcoin and electronic currency. So thank you so much again.
Well, thank you, and we'll have to have you on Follow the Coin soon.
Of course. Remember to follow us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weforshe. We'd also like to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing and Women and Girls. The show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the very first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.